I want to invite you to the, or welcome you all to the committee. Representative Hamilton, since he has like everything today, he gets to move the minutes. Any questions about that? Sorry to make you work so hard, Representative Hamilton.
So moved, Mr.
Any questions or comments besides that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's done. What else? Get to work then. Well, today is apparently, do you have a Mountain Lake Day going on as well as Hamilton?
Every day is Mountain Lake Day. Every day is Hamilton Day.
That's what I kind of thought. Well, welcome to Hamilton Day.
I'm just teasing.
Are we on TV? I hope we are, just to even make it. Oh, uh-oh. Darn. We tried to get the TV thing going, couldn't pull that off. Anyway, welcome to the committee. Obviously, you live here anyway. But tell us, move your bill, and then tell us what you're doing, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 827, be laid over for possible inclusion, I believe.
Okay.
Is the proper motion. And members, I understand that there's multiple sides to this bill. Basically, in a nutshell, what it does is it repeals the rate equalization. And just starting off, you know, I had a conversation here a while back with my mother, right? We were debating an issue. And she had me backed in the corner because she's a fierce negotiator and debater. And I was getting upset. And she said, kid, she said, I'm going to tell you right now, don't hate the opposition, but respect them, for they too are standing up for what they believe in. And I understand that, like I said, people are on both sides of this issue, multiple sides of this issue. And I think it's important that we have people come up and testify on that very, on what their thoughts are, what their concerns are, because some other advice that I received is to make sure that I fully understand the implications of my actions. And that's why I'm asking the professionals that are here to come down and testify as well. Mr. Chairman, like I said, this is the first bill that's up here. I do have two rate equalization bills. This one here is a full repeal that would kick in. And there is a fiscal note along with that as well. The fiscal notes, I believe everybody has a copy of that. It would come in effect on July 1st of 2011, and the fiscal note says that there's $18,000, excuse me, Mr. Held, on the fiscal note? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Mr. Chairman, can we have Mr. Held speak to the fiscal note? There was an error in this.
Yeah, welcome to committee, Mr. Held.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Held from the Department of Human Services, and this was just completed. And we, in reviewing it, determined this morning that the adjustment on page 3 of 4, you'll see about, I don't know, 8 or 10 rows down, there's a 51.25% and then a 22.25%. That those adjustments should not be made to this. And so the result of that is that the numbers would go up a bit. The first year would be about $35,000, $36,000, and the second year would probably be about $50,000.
So in the, Mr. Held, in the first, so in that first column, the zero should be taken out and made that $36,000. Is that what you're saying? Where it says adjusted for occupancy?
No, fiscal years, Mr. Chair, fiscal years 12 and 13 would remain at zero.
Okay.
Fiscal years 14 and 15 would be increased.
Okay, to what numbers?
To approximately $35,000 in fiscal year 14, and in fiscal year 15 it would be approximately $50,000 to $60,000.
Okay. So actually members could just make the general impact on the front page there if you wanted to. In the total cost, that's where the detail, we won't worry about that right now, but... But so if members wanted to look on page 1, they could strike the 18 and put in 35 and strike the 16 and put 50 to 60 as a target number, just so we know what we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so is that clear to members, just so you know the math? Okay. So I presume the testimony is similar to both bills, and so we're also going to be hearing 828. I don't know if we have – we can't have two bills before us at once. Okay, so we'll hear one, and then we'll – then we can lay it over, and then we'll take testimony on the second one, I think. Is that what you had in mind, Representative Hamilton?
That would be fine, Mr. Chairman. You know, like I said, this one will, the motion is to be held over for possible inclusion. The second one, I do have a few amendments and other folks as well.
Okay.
So I don't know if...
Well, let's do that. I think that'll be productive. It's the same discussion, so we'll just lay this over, unless you want to say something else. And then this is the full meal deal. There's no phase-in. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Just repealed and... Okay. So, members, any questions about this one, members? And then we'll take up the next one, which is a phased-in version, and I think the testimony would be the same. So, this bill is held over. And now we'll want to move the next 828.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that House File 828 be held over for possible inclusion.
Okay, that's and so that's the why don't you just discuss the base of the bill?
Yeah. The bill description, basically this is, like you had mentioned earlier, Mr. Chair, it is a phased-in, it has a phased-in clause here, where in beginning July 1st of 2011, it would make a 2% differential, would kick in October 1st of 2012, permissible up to a 4%, and October 14th. Excuse me. October 11th would be a 2%. October 12th would be a 4%. October 13th would be a 6%. And October of 2014, the private pay rate becomes unlimited at that point in time. So it is a phased-in clause within this bill. You also have a fiscal note. All the members should have a fiscal note on this as well. And similar to the first one, unless there's any corrections from the department, fiscal year 12, 13, and 14 would be a zero fiscal impact, and for year 15, it's $10,000 would be the fiscal right. note on this one.
And Mr. Held, to the fiscal note on both of these, isn't there some talk about spending down to poverty? Is that considered too far in the future to calculate, or is that built in, so then they would get on MA for their services? Is that calculated somewhere in there?
Mr. Chair, there's a number of assumptions that are built into this. And on this one, the same correction that I referenced earlier would apply, so that on page 3 of 4, the $10 million in fiscal year 15 would be about $30 or $40 million.
Well, actually, it says dollars and thousands. So how much do you...
I'm sorry, you're right, thousands.
You're just making me nervous.
Thank I've you. Been nice catch, Mr.
I'm trying to find 300 of my own, and
I'm so used to that. I'm sorry.
I'm going to kill my bill before we even get started.
So, just you want to repeat? So, if you just give us a summary on page one, where it says total cost savings to the state in 14, there is a number to insert there, which is something.
I'm sorry. Where are you looking?
Well, on page one, just to help us with the summary of the fiscal note, page one of the fiscal note. Those numbers, it's not really zero in 2014.
We're estimating that there would be no costs associated with this for the first 3 years.
And then, and what would it be in 2015 then?
And in 2015, it would be about 30 or 40.
30 to 40.
1,000.
Thank you. Now we can all put our pacemakers back. So is that clear, members? So that 10 is 3 to 4 times that. So, but Mr. Held, can you just, I'm sure it'll come up, but is there, there's, in both these fiscal notes, there's a really minimal calculation for people, the increased need because they get there quicker, because they spent their money. Is that a small effect in your calculation, or is that a significant one that's out a ways?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly what it is, and it's a pretty small effect. People will spend down a little bit faster as private pay rates go up and become Medicaid eligible, and it will result in more Medicaid days. The assumptions that we're using result in that increase in Medicaid days being very, very small.
Okay.
As reflected in such low dollars.
Okay. We're just asking the question. Any questions about the fiscal note? Representative Hodge.
Mr. Chair, and to the fiscal note, there's just one thing that I want to point out. I was actually just at an event where one of the members of our committee says, you know, we keep kicking the can down the road and we make promises we can't keep and all that. The one thing that got me interested, of this fiscal note is the long-term fiscal considerations. That says the years beyond fiscal year 15 will have a comparatively greater impact on the state's budget, and the increases will have a compounding effect, causing MA caseloads to increase at a faster rate. I just want to get an idea what, I mean, you know, that is a huge generality. Do you know what we would see in the outgoing fiscal years for, you know, increased MA spend downs? And
Mr. Held, can you comment on the can effect?
On the what effect?
The kicking the can, the can effect.
Mr. Chair, I'm not an authority on kicking cans down the road exactly.
Yes, but you are.
At least I'd like to think
called rebasing, but that's a different.
I have a feeling that's not what the debate should be about. But
okay.
This would have a larger effect over the horizon, and the reason, especially on the phase-out bill, is because the assumption is that if private pay rates were to increase beyond the Medicaid rate at approximately the rate of inflation, and we're using 2% per year for that, that would not affect caseload in a material way. And this limits it to 2% increases for the first 3 years. And only after that does a facility get the authority to increase rates at whatever rate they choose to. Our next assumption is that facilities would not immediately increase private pay rates to the level that they might ultimately increase them to, that it would take a few years of phasing in. But when you look at what is happening with other states where there isn't rate equalization, you see differentials of 25 to 50% in some cases. And so when you have a few years of phase-in and a few more years of that kind of build-up occurring, then our assumptions are that it would have a bigger effect when the can gets down the road that far.
Thank you. So I think that's as good as Representative Hosh. Do you want to going to kick this can some more, or you're good? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I
thought it was, I think you said it really well.
No, I think it's, personally, I think it's great that we're talking about the equalization. We have to discuss it in these times. I just want to make sure that, you know, we're not just looking at the next two biennium. This will have an impact.
Right.
That's far down the road.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the big thing here is in realizing that I've noticed that on the fiscal note, what's the fiscal note for the private payers? What's missing here is only government, as if somehow that's the only thing. What's missing on this fiscal note is no private pay, what they are going to be having to put forward in the meantime. And so it's kind of one of those things that I've noticed in several times on our fiscal notes that we just don't have that. But I think it's up to, to be a voice for them at saying, we recognize the fact that this may be maybe helpful to government and the MA, those who are on MA and who receive that service, they do. But this is really a situation where we're taxing private pay people in this situation. And they're not even given any recognition on a fiscal note for what they're having to do.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, you're right. You know, you're absolutely right, and that's why we have to have these conversations. The fiscal notes are specifically for what the effect is to government, to our bottom line, and the dollars that we're going to be spending or bringing in. I mean, that's the basis of these fiscal notes. The additional expense to the private sector, you know, it is capped here, 2%, additional 4%, 6%. We know that. What we don't know for sure is how many of the nursing homes, the care facilities, will incorporate this immediately. We can make some assumptions, and we probably can make some solid assumptions in the event this would pass. In the event this would pass, I would say that a large share, if not all of them, would incorporate this, and it will affect the private payers. There's no question about it. We'll have a number of testifiers coming in, and to hopefully they'll explain, I'm sure they will, explain how this is going to affect everybody that's in the nursing homes and Yeah, they'll weigh in on this as well.
Representative Hamilton.
But you're right.
And I think to help members understand the difference, there is, in the governor's budget, there was a surcharge, part of which was returned and part of which was retained by the state. I think you could, if you retain the money for a purpose beyond what it was put to do, that would be a tax. I think if you have a surcharge and you turn it back into the industry, that becomes, you know, a financing mechanism to do the service. I think if you allow a retail price to occur in an area that was regulated and frozen artificially, that's called the market, I think. And so when I go, if they raise the price of Charmin a dime a roll, I don't call it a tax. I say Charmin's gone up, and there's sales tax on top of that. But I just, anyway, just so we can, but we have a, we'll have a good discussion about
it. Well, to that point, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so I'm clear, I was addressing as far as how this is going to affect the private payers.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can debate the other side of that equation all you want, but that's the point that I was trying to make.
Yeah, very good. And so, should we do the amendments first and take testimony?
Please.
Okay, let's get the bill in the shape that you want to discuss it. And so we have the whole time today, members, and we have this bill, which is going to be the main one of interest, I think, and then the second one, which was going to be, which is a discussion about some rate adjustments. And so we have about an hour, I think, for this whole deal. So if testifiers and members remember that as they ask their questions, I don't want to limit discussion, but I think this is more than ample for this topic, especially since it's only being held over. So, Representative Hamilton, what amendment do you want to do first? The A2 first, I guess.
I'm trying to take the one that's least controversial. Oh, what the heck. Let's go in order, Mr. I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, the A2 amendment. Do you want to, Representative Hamilton moves the A2 amendment. Do you want to describe it to us?
Yeah, the A2 amendment. I've been up here now for 7 years, and I've been squawking pretty loudly about fair and equitable funding and rate disparities. Specifically in nursing homes, we have metro rates, we have rural rates, and we have deep rural rates, and that gap continues to widen. This amendment, basically what it does, it compresses that. So in total disclosure, basically it's taking dollars from the high rate receivers and reallocating those to low rate receivers.
Okay. And in terms of public testimony, they can all come when the bill is marked up. But are there any questions from members about this? Is it clear what this is? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hamilton, remember when Mr. Held showed us his rate report and he broke out, he had the scatter charts broken out by the different tiers? I mean, I'm with you. I think that we shouldn't have big rate disparities. The geographic rate disparity thing just doesn't. I think it's outlived its usefulness, frankly. But, you know, that those scatter charts showed me that at least, you know, we like to presume that those that are getting the highest rates are giving the best quality. And yet those charts show that that's not necessarily true, at least in the rural, I always get the numbers mixed up, but in the lowest two tiers, that doesn't appear to be any correlation at all. So I just wondered if you wanted to comment on any of that in relation to what you're doing here.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Well, that's like T-ball, isn't it?
Yeah.
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, I'd love to comment on that. And actually, when we were taking the testimony, I leaned over to Representative Lanny and I said, I've got a solution to all this. We're just going to pay everybody at the low rate, and where quality is going to go up. Because, you know, what I saw in those graphs, we had the high-rate receivers, we had, you know, the middle, and then we had the low. And the low-rate receivers were high on quality. And so, of course, I was being a little sarcastic. You know, I was. I admit that. But then I also have been in discussions with a number of folks in this room to talk about paying for quality as well. And I want to continue having those conversations. You know, some of us, we may all end up there, some of us sooner than others, as far as when we're going to need the help in nursing homes, right? And I want to make sure that not only myself, that's a selfish reason, but other people are well cared for. And so I am an advocate for, and becoming more and more of an advocate for, pay for quality. And I've also said, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I mean it as well, if you can't achieve that quality, we'd be happy to work with the new owners, you know. It's important. It's important. I am very fortunate the nursing homes that we have in our area, you know, they're on that list for good quality. They're also on that list for low-rate receivers, and the threat is very real about them having to close. And so what do we do to address that in the meantime when we're also looking at these huge budget deficits and everything else? So, yeah, I don't know. I think I addressed some of your comments there. But.
Other questions to the amendment? Let's just adopt it then. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? What's the next one you got there, Representative Hamilton?
What is the next one? Let's do
number
the
three.
A3 amendment. And the A3 amendment, and I believe the fiscal note is coming, or we'll have Mr. Held speak to that. Basically what it talks about, the A3 amendment, it allows nursing facilities to negotiate new rates when there is a new owner. And, yeah, I don't know, do you have any questions, I guess?
It's like the new owner theme here. Okay, Mr. Held, sorry. Don't want to put you in that role of having to be a representative. So.
We did a very rough cost estimate on this, and we're thinking it's going to be, Mr. Chair, about $400,000 a year.
And
we can work on a more refined analysis on it, but it's doing something we've never done before, and how exactly it would work out would be yet to be discovered.
All right, well, I think it makes some sense, and it would actually be nice if you could head it off before you needed a new owner, and they wouldn't have to go out of business. So, Representative Hamilton, do you want to talk about this?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman, and you know, the other thing I want to point out is I brought this up to Mr. Held. I said, if we do something like this, well, am I going to sell my nursing home to, you know, even though I don't own one, just hypothetical here, but am I going to sell my nursing home to the person down the street and then they sell their nursing home to me and we just swap them, then can we renegotiate? And the answer is no, that cannot take place. Mr. Held?
The amendment would prevent that from happening.
All right. Oh, is there? Okay. Questions from members? I think it's kind of novel and you're kind of, and you would like to adopt this, is that right, Representative Hamilton?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Everybody clear about that? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question is maybe to the chair is, are we going to see the fiscal note on this? When are we going to see what this will do?
I think because this is brought forward as an idea. So if it goes into my omnibus, there'll have to be some kind of impact on that.
So at that point, we would see the fiscal note.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if it costs $400,000, I can give you a hint it might not be in my omnibus. But I... just would be we haven't bargained about this whole thing, but I, yeah, the negotiations are still, maybe you want this, I don't know, we'll see you. But anyway, for now, I think it's good for us to look at ideas and try to do something different. And at least when you put an amendment on a bill, people start talking about the adopted amendment on a bill that's sitting in a committee waiting to have the omnibus adopted. So it creates a good discussion,
which
is productive. Representative Liebling, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would address this to Mr. Held. This seems to me like it would require a lot of additional administrative work. Is this something that, you know, would this only be a few, do you think, in a year? Or does this require the department to suddenly start doing these individual negotiations all over the place?
Mr. Held.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, this could be some additional work. It undoubtedly would be. I think it would be limited because our historical pattern is roughly about 10 changes of ownership per year right now, and this limits the circumstances under which a change of ownership could lead to possible renegotiation, and we think that we might be doing that with 3 facilities a year, and so it's not like the kind of a burden where I'd say we simply can't take that on.
And Representative Liebling, this could also be made cost neutral just by taking it out of the available funds and just kind of doing a little mini rebasing. So if this was, which is what we actually did in the 95-5 amendment that we adopted earlier, which, and just to editorialize on that, I'm amazed that places short distance away have just as hard of people with considerably less money, and we expect them to do the same job and sit through all the same inspections. and provide the same level of service and have the same ratios. So, anyway, any other questions about this? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A4 is a really good amendment. That's mine. This actually I intend to put in my omnibus, maybe our omnibus, whatever. I will share it. It'll be ours soon enough. But this is there's been great talk about combining some of the licensing functions and why they have two and all of that. The massive it, rather instead of two choices, you can transfer DHS over to health with all its background stuff, which would be quite a large undertaking, or you just move all these facilities over to DHS, and this proposes that. If this becomes moving, the Department of Health will certainly have some opinion about that, I'm sure. And this is meant to let them know I'm thinking about it. So I'm hoping to have a number of these kind of things come out in the next 10 days so people can know what is really going to come in my bill. So this, I think it's assisted living. It's any facility that's licensed by the Department of Health. We left them body art and such things as and the audiologists and hearing aid dispensers, etc. So that licensing would stay at Department of Health. But this is just the facilities. So. Any questions about that?
Excellent.
There you go. People are piling on. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Alrighty. So there's that. And A5 is Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the first thing I'd like to do is move to strike through an oral amendment. Section 3 was a drafting error and not intended to be part of this bill at this moment.
Didn't we just discuss this yesterday? I know that. Just Section 3, yeah, so it's lines 2.9 to 2.14. So you can incorporate that as an oral amendment. And so then if you would tell us what your amended amendment does, please.
Yes, this bill allows for nursing homes that are certified through the Medicare and Medicaid area to only be certified through there and to not have to go through the other licensing requirements that the state currently requires of them. So basically allowing the what the federal government requires to be the standard and if it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for us too.
There's some comments. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schumacher, why would you not require mandated report? Why are you taking away employees of boarding care homes or nursing homes to not be mandated reporters?
Oh, that's Section 6, Representative Schumacher.
Six.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, this was just an effort, in my understanding, to continue the just to make it even on all lines for what was being done in the first part to make sure that everything else was covered and cleaned up.
Mr. Chair, I believe employees in a boarding home or a nursing home are dealing with vulnerable adults, and we just had a discussion on this not too long ago. And you know, as a social worker and a mandated reporter myself, it is not a cumbersome requirement or mandate. I think it's something that we shouldn't do lightly. I would move to strike Section 6.
And maybe we want to work on that a little bit. We just want to call that friendly, and we'll work on Sections 1 through 4. Now, I don't think that I think this is some territory that we weren't necessarily thinking we were wandering into. So,
Mr. Chair,
you can incorporate your motion as friendly.
I think Aging Services might be willing to speak to that just a little bit, if we could have someone from...
Well, why don't we, come on down. I'm not versed in this topic right now. It sounds like we have some discussion about it. So let's talk about this, and there's a motion, and we can talk to the motion.
M-
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm with Aging Services of Minnesota on behalf of, here also on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. And with me is Patty Cullen with Care Providers of Minnesota. Just a quick clarification with regard to the section in the A5 amendment, Section 6. The intent of this provision is not to necessarily get rid of the fact that they'd be mandated reporters. They would still have to comply with federal vulnerable adult mandated reporting requirements. This just gets rid of the duplication and the overlap of state regulation over federal regulation. So they would still have to report suspected cases under federal regulation. It just sort of gets rid of the confusion that currently exists between state and federal VAA law right now.
Ms. Cullen, I think you need to tell us some more. So I need to hear some more. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Ms. Thurlow said, there is currently under federal law, there's a requirement that you report any suspected abuse and neglect within a certain period of time, which is less than 24 hours, as soon as you can figure out that it's occurred. Right now what happens is that under the state process, the definitions are a little bit different and the process is a little bit different. So you could have an occurrence in a facility and have two separate reports that have to be filed, one under the state definitions and one under the federal definitions and process. So all we're trying to do is to say we should only have to report that occurrence once. So it's not taking away any reporting that currently exists. If something happens, we still have to report it under the federal requirements, and we still have to follow a process that has been designated, but we don't have to do the second report. And that's all. It looks a little bit suspicious, I agree, if I saw this saying we're no longer mandatory reporters. If we could layer in here something, and maybe an amendment that would give you a little bit of comfort as this goes forward, saying they would still have to report under the federal requirements any abuse and neglect, we'd be willing to talk about that.
I'll let Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm a little premature here if we're kind of done with that specific thing, but I wanted to know, and maybe later on in the discussion.
Some interim work happening in the next half hour or so.
Yes, but Mr. Chair, what I want to know is, you know, since this apparently this is your amendment, if I'm not mistaken, is really to give us some examples of other things that this is making us not have to do anymore. So, you know, I don't have a very good sense of what.
Representative Haas, just want to formally withdraw your amendment, and I think you've got me interested, and I think that they're going to come up with some clarifying language that might make this be clear. And then if you still want to remove your amendment, there'll be time today yet.
Mr. Chair, I will withdraw my amendment with an editorial comment, if I may.
You get the editorial,
okay.
Sir.
I think this is a good discussion to have in the Reform Committee, and I'm not sure why this, these bills came directly to the Finance Committee. I'm suspecting time constraints, but these are discussions that, I mean, they have significant impacts, and I hope that even with the time constraints, we'll be able to still discuss these policy issues and figure things out.
Editorial taken. And so, Representative Liebling, you had a... So stay here. We want to talk about... Who's the other question, Representative Liebling? Did you, now we're back to the amendment.
Okay,
just
well,
as
well,
before
thanks,
us.
Mr. Chair. And I just, you know, it brings up the question of, you know, it sounds nice. You know, in a lot of areas we're saying, oh, let's take away a lot of mandates. And I know that there are a lot of mandates in this area, but I also want to understand better what we would not be doing that we're currently doing if this amendment were to become law. And I don't have a good sense of that at all. You know, I'd really like kind of a list of specifics before.
Well, I think there's two witnesses here who could comment to some extent about that. So do you want to just discuss the amendment as a whole? And
well,
please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I'll just start up generally and just say that the intent here, again, is to not stop doing regulations that they're already doing. There exists two levels of regulations for nursing homes in the state of Minnesota. There are the federal regulations, which, as we all know, as we've all had conversations with all of you, we can't do much about the federal regulations that nursing homes have to comply with here in the state of Minnesota. Overlaid on top of that, then, are also state regulations. And quite often what we hear from our members is that while we have one survey process come out, the state regulations overlap with the federal regulation, and for one violation, they get dinged twice. And so what they're saying is, you know, have us comply with the federal regulations, but don't ding us twice for one regulation or for one violation. So in general, as we talk about specifics, keep that in mind. Our intent here, again, is to not lessen sort of the overall regulatory framework that protects consumers, but to make sure that that we're dealing with not overlapping regulations as well.
And as a little bit of further clarification, probably a dozen or so years ago, the health department changed its licensure rules, and it removed the inconsistencies. One of the reasons why we hadn't done it before that time is there was some inconsistencies in terms of taking a look at the nursing home regulations that that we had developed in the state and the federal regulations. All those have been removed. So if you're in compliance with the staffing or care planning or assessment at the federal level, you were also in compliance with the regulations at the state level. So as we look ahead, as we look since that time and reviewed the data that we received from the health department, we haven't seen any situation where there was a state licensure rule citation issued on its own, where there hasn't also been a federal citation. So there's nothing different and new or more strict about our state rules that isn't already captured in the nursing home certification process. So as we were thinking about ideas on ways to save money, we were saying there's some duplication here because they have to have surveyors doing that state survey at the same time the federal process. Isn't this a way maybe to look at perhaps saving some money down the way? That was our original impetus behind this, is to say if there's duplication going on both with VAA process and regulation process, here's some ideas for you. There are some state-only nursing facilities, and that's why the language is written as is. Yeah. There are some facilities like the veterans homes that are not certified under the federal program, and so for those that don't have the federal certification, it would not apply to them.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers. You know, I didn't hear any specifics there, and I know there are a lot of things that are covered by this, but you know, I guess I would like to know. I mean, you know, this is, you know, simplifying the regulatory process is a laudable goal, but I just feel like I need to know more about what the actual impact would be on the patients, and before I'm really comfortable doing this. It just, the other question, I guess, would be, you know, or maybe it would be more of a comment, and not so much to you, but, you know, in other areas of healthcare, the rhetoric seems to be, you know, we are Minnesota. We don't want to just do what the feds tell us to do. We want to be, you know, this is our 10th Amendment right, and here we're going completely the opposite direction and just saying, well, let the feds do it. So I guess maybe the question would be, what if the feds change their mind about some of these regs, and then are we then automatically adopting? If this amendment became law, are we automatically adopting whatever changes the feds might make in the regulations?
Representative Liebling, glad to see your 10th Amendment spunk kind of flaring up here. Whichever of you. Just kidding.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Collin.
I can respond to that. Representative Liebling, the federal regulations themselves that have been in place since December 23rd, 1997, is that right? No, 1988. It's been a long time.
Seems like yesterday.
The interpretive guidelines have changed. The regulations have not changed. And we don't see that there's any horizon by which a system where most other states are just governed by the federal regulations would change them. And if they do change, it wouldn't be that quickly. My assumption is we're not repealing the nursing home rules. And so if there was a situation where the federal regulations would change in the future, there would be plenty of opportunity for the legislature to revisit this issue.
Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, thanks. I mean, I guess I am hearing that basically we're, you know, we can always take it back, but we are kind of turning it over to the feds then, and, you know, in some areas that might be wise and some not, but I guess I don't feel like I know enough about how this would impact the patients, and I'm hoping that we'll have some testimony from some of the patient advocates on this, if they're prepared to do that, or if not today, maybe later on.
And Representative Liebling, just to give you some comfort, this is only being held over for possible inclusion, and purposely they're brought out now in some venue that looks like healthcare to begin the dialogue to try to get some no public input. Just my comment about this, the nursing homes, I think you had 1% lately in the last, I don't know how many years, and they're attempting to serve people while they do mountains of paperwork, and so at least if it's the same report, we hope they just have to at least not to spend a half hour there they could spend caring for one of our seniors. That's the intent, and none of us are interested in this. There's been a lot of discussion about oversight and things we do. This member is very interested in patient quality and protection, but just not duplication. I think, any more questions about this? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've doing some work on this whole reporting thing also, Representative Schumacher, and things that you're working on here. And I think there may be one of the things that you can do here to also help avoid the duplication, but still making sure there's a Minnesota tie-in and a single report mechanism instead of this double thing going on, is that saying that the federal report or the federal whatever it is by statute, that will be able to be used as the Minnesota report, and that way you don't have to have two separate things going on or two separate things, as you would call that. But I think what I'm kind of hearing is, how can we keep, you know, the Minnesota tying to that, especially as far as the certifying and some of those things, that it can be a single process. I think there are other examples in statute where you have a unified approach instead of a two-track approach. So that's just an idea for, since this is kind of what we're doing right now, is a possible way to handle, because I think getting to this point of simplifying is still a worthy goal. It's just a question of, you know, kind of how can we get there and preserve our Minnesota quality standards.
And members of that, I think what I'm going to do is just we'll move to testimony, and I think it'd be a good time for Representative Schumacher and the two witnesses and Ms. Pinelli to go to the hallway and come up with an amendment to this, which will at least get us partway there. Representative Hosh, what'd you say?
As long as it's late, Mr. Chair, as long as it's laid over, I mean, it's pretty.
Well, I'd like to do it now. They think that this is they can come up with something at least to move it the direction. We're trying to do some work, and so if you don't mind, there's 100 things to work on. At least this one will be done for now. So why don't you go do that, and we'll take this up after testimony, if that's okay with those of you who are going to do that.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, do you have any more amendments?
No more amendments,
okay.
But I would like to clarify a comment. I was a little reckless on how I did answer my response back to Representative Kiffmeyer. When we do this, the question was, will private payers be paying more, or, you know, what's the debate around there? And my response is, yes, potentially, but I still want to give the nursing homes some credit as well about being responsible, covering their costs. They're going to do that. They're going to be competitive. They will compete. And I'm just thinking about myself. If I'm ever in their care and they're charging me too much, you know, I've also got my mom down in Iowa. That's an option. I got my in-laws over in Mabel, Minnesota. That's an option. You know, they're going to have to remain competitive. So if I was a little reckless with my comments, I want to give the nursing home some credit, too, on how they'll manage this.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hamilton. I never think of you as being reckless whatsoever.
Let's do the testimony now.
But however, Mr. Chairman, I did have a, in regards to that, one of the questions I do have in the approach here, and you mentioned the competitiveness, would we be in a situation, though, that the if the private pay would be in this situation where they would be paying more, are they still going to be bound by this has to, you know, this service for Medicaid or whatever it is has to be the exact same as for the private pay? In other words, competitiveness usually means you can compete by adding some value or things people are willing to pay more for. Do you have any comment in regards to that situation?
Representative Hamilton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, you know, that's a great question as well. And I'd like others to comment on that when they come up and testify, because I think what I heard is, if I'm going to be paying more, do I get additional services or whatever the case may be? And I think some of this is just calling a spade, and are we receiving the amount of money that it actually costs to deliver those services. And I think maybe what we'll hear in the testimony is right now, because of the caps, because of some of the limitations, that they're actually not getting paid to the full amount of what services cost. I think that'll be some of the debate as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think with our testifiers, too, we certainly want to get to them.
And so I think we should hear from Mr. Dahl and Mr. Burkham, just to kind of build the case for the bill, and then we'll hear from some people that on the other side. I think that'd be appropriate. And so if you're separate, you can come separately, it's fine. Are you together? Or are you? Okay, you can just sit. Yeah. Welcome to the committee. And tell us your name. And
thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bob Dahl. I am the president.
You've got about 4 minutes apiece, I think, if that's sufficient, unless you want to.
Okay.
Okay. Just.
All right.
We can ask questions later. That way we
have time for some. I'll try and talk very fast.
No, you just talk slow and okay. Tell us your story.
My name is Bob Dahl. I'm the president and CEO of Elam Care. We are a nonprofit provider of older adult services. I'm also the board chair of Aging Services of Minnesota. Some of you may know that organization. And I'm also here today testifying on behalf of the Long-Term Care Imperative. Elam Care, the organization that I serve, has been around for 84 years. We operate 7 care centers in Minnesota and 8 senior housing sites. And every day in our care centers, we care for just under 700 residents in our facilities. I support the phase-out of the state's equalization law that is proposed, and I ask for you to support House File 828. Rate equalization is a state law that was enacted in 1976, and it requires that Minnesota nursing homes who participate in the medical assistance program charge the same rate for privately paying residents as the medical assistance plan, as the medical assistance rate that is set by the state. Since its passage, only one other state, our neighbors to the west, North Dakota, have adopted a similar law. Much has changed since 1976. With respect to nursing home policy. Regarding payments and rates that are set for care centers, Minnesota is no longer a cost-based reimbursement system that covers the actual cost of care to provide that we provide for the individuals in our care centers. And those that we serve, the profile of those that are in our care centers has also changed in the last 40 years. The length of stay in a care center is now dramatically shorter than it was when this policy or this law was enacted, and that has reduced the threat of spending down a person's assets. It's much less a threat today than it was when this policy was adopted many years ago. And finally, there's a clear recognition that today we cannot continue to rely on government as a source of funding for all of the long-term care needs, especially given that we have a rapidly growing senior population that will stress our system in the future. At first blush, the concept of rate equalization sounds reasonable, and some have argued that it's only fair that everyone pays the same price for the services they're receiving. However, the reality is that the state medical assistance plan has not kept up with the cost of care, and as a result, neither the state MA rate that we receive or the private pay we receive because of equalization covers the cost of actual care. Instead, providers like Elam are required to subsidize that cost of care, even for those that have their own resources and could pay for it privately. Currently, the gap between the reimbursement we receive and the actual cost to us to provide that care is, on average, about $25 a day. We receive $25 a day less, on average, than the actual cost of care. And using that as an average, just for our organization, that amounts to over $4 million a year in lost revenue that we don't have to pay for, to pay our employees. It was said earlier that repealing this law would be a tax on those that are paying privately. And I would position it differently. I would say that repealing this is allowing us to charge the actual cost of care that's being provided in our care centers. I would distinguish that between another topic you may be talking about in the future, the provider tax or the surcharge. That is a tax on the privately paying residents. But this is not. It's actually covering the cost of care that is provided for those that we serve. Our medical assistance budget in this state, you know this very well, is growing, and as the age wave approaches the state, it is my belief the state should set policies that discourage individuals from relying on medical assistance to pay for their long-term care needs. Continuing the phase out of rate equalization, along with other financing reforms, will encourage better planning for individuals that may face long-term care needs in the future, and it would also help us stabilize the state Medicaid budget in the future. It's my belief the time has come to closely examine the policies that impact the way that we care for residents receiving long-term care in Minnesota. I don't believe that we can continue to ask providers to carry the burden of subsidizing those that have the resources to pay for their own care, repealing rate equalization will not close the gap between reimbursement and actual cost of care. It's not the solution that's going to be the salvation for all of us, but it will help us cover the cost of care, and it is, I believe, a crucial step towards long-term care financing reform.
Maybe 30 more seconds.
That's the end of my comments. Okay. I'll turn it over to
we did very well. I think that was relaxed and just what we were hoping for, so thank you very much. We always wish we had more time for all this. Welcome to the committee. It's like no money, no time. It's common. That's what you live in. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Jim Burcham. I'm the president and CEO of Elder Care of Minnesota, which is located out of Little Falls. My wife and I own 7 nursing homes and 12 assisted livings all throughout Minnesota. I'm here today to testify on behalf of Care Providers of Minnesota, which works together with Aging Services of Minnesota together as the long-term care imperative. Specifically, I want to talk a little bit about some of the historical perspective of the rate equalization law. There will be obviously opposition to the change, but I want to answer beforehand some of the ideas I think that need to be expressed. One current belief is that the policy of rate equalization for nursing facilities has forced the state to provide Medicaid rates that cover the cost of providing care. Okay? Well, the fact is, since the elimination of the cost-based reimbursement in the 1990s, the state has allowed a significant gap to develop between the average MA rate and the cost of care. Currently, the average MA rate, which we receive for our residents, is about $25 a day below the average cost of care. This is a significant number. This is why nursing homes are closing and will continue to close. 59 nursing homes have closed in the last 10 years. Another concern is that nursing facilities will charge a huge differential payment to private paying residents when the rate equalization is repealed. Okay, well, there's current protections in this current legislation. It's going to go up to 2% the first year, 4% the next year, and then 6%. And that would be the maximum. That doesn't necessarily mean all the nursing homes will do it, but that would be what the law would state. In the fourth year, the rate equalization would be fully repealed. Okay, so then it will be a free market. So what will happen in that fourth year? We do not know, but again, the nursing homes will all be different. That'll be an individual business decision. And one thing that I think you need to know is that why do us in the nursing home area have rate equalization? No other healthcare providers have that. If you're a hospital, if you're a chiropractor, if you're a dentist, if you're a physician, you do not have to charge what medical assistance rates are. You can charge what the market is or what you believe is a fair price for your services. Okay, also, many believe that repealing equalization will cause private paying residents will spend down faster and cause greater use of Medicaid by nursing home residents. again, this is a phase-in. It's a three-year phase-in. There's much shorter lengths of stay in the nursing homes. The spend-down, the residents aren't there long enough that the spend-down tends to be a factor. We do not really see where that will be a really big issue. And finally, there are fears that we need, that the private pay residents need protection to from rate equalizations to avoid excessive charges for nursing home care. It's been the state's experience that the policy of equalization discourages savings for long-term care. Okay. The message to consumers has clearly been sent that regardless of payment source, the exact same care and services will be available, will be made available to you, whether you're private pay or whether you're medical assistance. Okay, it's a good concept, but what happens is people then, this encourages transfers of assets to family members and general spend down of personal assets. Removing this disincentive is a step towards long-term care financing reform and can help, I think, the state to encourage individuals to save for their own long-term care needs. We need to have people to begin saving for long-term care. We really do. By eliminating rate equalization, we believe and hope all of us will now and in the future will begin saving for our long-term care. We need to do that, and I think this rate, eliminating the rate equalization will help us in that effort.
Thank you.
I'm available for...
Yeah, and so... any questions for the two witnesses? So I think, I'm just trying to decide how we should handle, but why don't you do one question and we'll have the others come down and then you get the good question and you get the one. How about that?
Well, thank you, Mr.
Make it a good one.
My question is, I wonder, you have 12 nursing or 12 assisted living and seven nursing homes. I'm wondering what, as a worker in the nursing home, I know about the low wages that, that we all make, but I'm wondering what the wage of the administrator is in a nursing home today. Is it a business? Yes.
Mr. Bertram.
Go ahead. Chair. Okay, the wage of an administrator can vary. I can just use an average wage of an administrator would be somewhere between $60,000 to $100,000 per year.
Representative Fritz.
That's all.
Very good. Good. Do one from each side. Okay, then we're
going. Oh, that's right.
Go ahead. You can have it. We'll balance it out. This would be bipartisan. It'd be good. Okay, you'll have to wait. Okay, let's. Thank you. We'll come back to you maybe. It's okay if you want. So why don't Ms. Allen and Ms. Kimball come down? Looks like you're both from AARP. That'd be probably a good mix. And then we'll have Jane Okrum. I can't say your last name. It was Ms. Jane, and then Mr. McAfee will come down. So. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome back, I should say. You're here a lot. So.
Thank you. I'm Michelle Kimball. I'm the Senior State Director for AARP here in Minnesota. I have with me one of our terrific volunteers, Karina Allen, and I also want to point out to the committee that you should have a letter from another one of our wonderful volunteers, Christine Stone, with a personal message to all of you with personal experience that we all feel is significant.
So you can take 6 or 7 minutes for the two of you. That's how you can we can organize your time, okay? Because you're kind of together. 6 or 7 minutes would be great, so.
Absolutely will adhere
Thank
to that.
Thank you.
I do appreciate the opportunity to come before this committee again to testify in opposition to House File 827 and House File 828 proposals to repeal rate equalization. These proposals will, in fact, as we all know, force nursing home residents who pay their own way to pay more. It will result in a significant cost shift, in reality a tax on people who did the right thing, saved their entire lives, and now pay for their own care out of pocket. By 2014, nursing homes would be able to charge private pay residents whatever they wanted and use it however they wanted without any guarantee of better quality. Not only would such a shift cost individuals thousands of dollars more, but it also could cost the state more. Increasing the daily rate for private pay residents means, as we have heard, that they will spend down faster and become eligible for medical assistance sooner. Now, while the recent fiscal note that was just discussed today indicated by 2015 a cost of $30,000 to $40,000, which does seem minimal, a fiscal note that was done in 2006 indicated that in 2009 it would cost the state $9 million. And we sort of wonder what the discrepancy is there between the two fiscal notes. But the bottom line is the current fiscal note is making an assumption that rates will only be 5%, 10%, 15% above the Medicaid rate, when in reality, nursing homes will be able to charge basically anything they want, whether that's 10% more or that's 20% more or whether that's 120% more. So I would question exactly how much more that will cost the state if send down is going to be significantly faster because of higher costs. And while it initially may start out smaller, that could significantly increase depending on what the real costs of care would be according to any given nursing home. Furthermore, and I do want to point out that Minnesotans, your constituents, overwhelmingly want lawmakers to maintain nursing home rate equalization. In December of last year, we conducted a statewide survey with the University of Minnesota Center for Survey Research, asking Minnesota consumers of all ages how they feel about repealing Minnesota's longstanding rate equalization law. And the results were very clear. 86% of respondents, and that's across all ages, that's across incomes, and that is across party lines, support maintaining rate equalization. And I just want to repeat that. 86% of Minnesotans, your constituents, support maintaining this important law. I know
you've got about 2 minutes altogether. So if you're going to, is your friend going to talk, or are you just, were you planning to have both of you say something?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll turn it over to Karina now.
All right, thanks.
Okay. I'm Karina Allen, a volunteer for AARP. I'm not a lobbyist. I'm a senior that has been here many times in the past, lobbying on health care issues, especially in long-term care. I started in the late 70s lobbying for home health care. In my second career, I served as a social work consultant in a nursing home, and I've also been on the board of one home for 18 years. My experience has led me to want to help make changes in long-term care. The nursing home rate equalization law was one of many that improved nursing home care in Minnesota. The main reason for passing the nursing home rate equalization law was simple. As a state, we do not want a two-tiered health care system. It was difficult to get equally good. It is difficult to get equally good health care for all nursing home residents when one group of residents pays more. Before nursing home rate equalization, most of the good nursing homes had two lists. If a medical assistant patient needed a bed, most good homes did not have a bed available immediately. However, if the person needing a bed was private pay, there was always a bed available. Of course, the intake worker was told to deny that there was such a list. Often when a medical assistant resident left the nursing home for a temporary hospital stay, there might not be a bed available when the resident returned. Sometimes patients had to be kept in the hospital longer because it was difficult to find a nursing, a medical assistant bed. Many medical assistant patients are people from our middle class who have run out of money paying for their nursing home care. It is hard for them and very cruel of us to then force them to have to adjust to poorer care. The people affected the most are not the wealthy. The very rich usually hire nurses around the clock and stay at home. After nursing home rate equalization was passed, the poor nursing homes disappeared and the good homes multiplied because they were paid just as much to take care of medical assistance patients as private pay. Let's not kill a bill that helped make our nursing homes so good. I would also like to comment on some of the things that were said here today. For one thing, extra I believe that they're still charging 10% extra for private rooms when a nursing home does not have all private rooms. Let's see, Rule 50, we had that. The nursing homes asked to get rid of that. That was based on the five, on cost in the five different areas. Why don't we go back to Rule 50 again then? And the other thing is, if you want, beside the 10% for a private room, if you want to have your own wheelchair, you have to pay for it. The home is supposed to have some wheelchairs, but there aren't enough usually. And so most, or an awful lot of people, if they can get a relative to pay for a wheelchair so they can have their own.
Ms. Allen, that's actually, I gave you twice as much time. So
I beg your pardon?
I gave you twice as much time just so you could finish your testimony. Okay. So I'm really glad you're here. Sorry. I know you're, thank you. No, you're doing great. I know you could go on for a while and teach us a lot. Let's hear from the other two witnesses that are here, and then we'll, let's just move to the other, if the people from the Senior Workers and Quality, Mr. McAfee and Ms. Jane. Welcome back again. Did you have a nice lunch?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did.
Yeah.
Even though my diet's restricted these days.
Oh, did you find something? Was the DOT suitable for your culinary needs?
I was able to treat Mr. McAfee and his driver today. His son's friend, Mark McAfee, was able to drive Mr. McAfee in today so he could be here to testify. So I thank you for the opportunity to see him again as well.
Well, welcome. And if you can take 6 minutes between you, that would be great. And then we'll have a little time for chat. I'm not trying to run this through, but I just want to have a little dialogue. And
right.
I'm liking that. So.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jane Okramovich, and I'm a senior, as you can tell, and a volunteer advocate who currently serves as the president of the Seniors and Workers for Quality Care Coalition. And we are the people at the heart of long-term care. I became involved in the issues in long-term care originally because of my mother, who died of Alzheimer's disease in 2005 after being in a nursing home for 8 years. But I'm now concerned because these issues impact me even more directly. As a representative of the Seniors and Workers for Quality Care, I testify today about the inequity of House Files 827 and 828, the proposed repeal of rate equalization in Minnesota. Unfortunately, repealing the state's rate equalization law won't automatically prevent nursing homes from experiencing financial hardship. Homes all over the United States, even those in the other 48 states that allow homes to charge private pay patients more, are closing. The reasons for closure are far more complex than the existence of rate equalization. Of greatest concern to us in eliminating rate equalization is the looming possibility of nursing homes that will pick and choose from the waiting list for admission based on the ability to pay. And I will cut this part of my testimony short because I think Ms. Allen did an excellent job of telling you what she's experienced in the past. But I do know that it does, a two-tiered system exists in other states because I've experienced that as well, and so have others. Right now, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. McAfee, who is a spousal caregiver, to offer his personal account of the importance of rate equalization. Mr. McAfee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and all you people. ladies and gentlemen, for 32 years, I was a teacher and later a small business owner. My wife, Alice, was a legal secretary. She was an accountant and federal program officer. We saved our money over the years, and we probably did not spend money on extravagances. We have a three-bedroom Rambler that we bought in the GI Bill. We raised two children and enjoyed our life in Roseville. Alice was diagnosed with dementia in 2004, and I took care of her for 2 years myself. But things got a little tough, so then we decided, my daughter and I decided, and the son, to put her in Presbyterian Homes in Arden Hills. And she's been there 4 years, and she seems to enjoy the care. She's a little defiant at first, but she just grew into it. And she is an inspiration up there. She's the other day she had pneumonia, congested, and I said, and she started laughing. I said, "Do you feel good?" "Yes." So that's why I go up there every day, and twice I feed her twice a day. And my daughter comes once a week or twice a week and helps me out. I also help other residents. I wheel them around and talk to them. That's very important. And I help them cut their food and do stuff like that. I know all the residents by name. I know all the residents' assistants. And I know a lot of the staff. And I've even talked to the head person of the Presbyterian Homes. We didn't qualify for, sorry about my voice, we didn't qualify for medical assistance. And because we had IRAs and we had mutual funds and we had some stocks, and then our cost, you might be interested to know, we have to pay our long-term insurance kicked in, and that covers about a third of the cost. Two-thirds of it we have to come up with. I come up with that. And then the I'll give you the, it's about $6,700 a month for costs, and it can go, and then we get $2,700 from the private, from the long-term care. So we have to come up with like $4,000 a month for her care. And that can be more. So if we, but her average for her long-term care now is going to only be about 10 months left. So then we'll have to go on from there. And but I thought most people did what I did, my wife did. We saved. And we lived good. We traveled, went to Europe twice. And I got a couple more things I want to tell you. So I just want to know what we did wrong. Maybe some of you can tell me what I did wrong. I'm 85 years old. I have to worry about nursing home care now and nurse costs going up. And I don't, and our rates and making things unfair. Let's face it, it's going to be unfair. I think the equalization should stay. I should think all you new people on the legislature should really think about what nursing homes do and see it on the behalf of the people in the nursing home as well as the staffs that run it. And think about yourselves. Where are you going to be? And think about your families. Now, what kind of a, you know, situation are we going to leave? So I guess we spin down and do what? I don't know. I hope I don't have to do that. I'm not rich, but I'm probably more conservative than most Republicans.
Well, thank you. It's nice to have a McAfee
back.
But I back.
Enjoyed talking to you. Thank
oh,
you.
Yeah, Mr. McAfee. It's nice to have a McAfee back at the table. We had great respect for your son, so thank you
if
for
I
that.
If I could just add one yeah. more comment to it, Representative, Mr. Chair, and that is the additional concern of our coalition is that the supposed increase in the revenue in this repeal might bring temporarily mean that there's, but it does not guarantee a stairs, but it does not guarantee a stable, well-trained staff to provide this much-needed care. And this is a big concern for us. There's nothing in this bill that assures that the direct care worker will benefit from the repeal. And I do have some other comments. We have an administrator from Greater Minnesota coming in also who belongs to Aging Services of Minnesota that does not support the repeal.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to, I have an idea. There's one more bill we want to do yet today, which I think that Representative Hamill can do in record time because it's going to sort of thematic on the whole theme. Is that right? So if I lay this bill, what do you think? If I lay this bill over for now, we can do your bill, you can make your amendment, give a one-minute version of it, and is that fair? Well, of your last bill?
It's more than fair.
But then we can come back and have a little panel about this, and I think we can dig into this. We'll have 10 minutes or 15 minutes to have a little dialogue. I think it would be kind of interesting. So
thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, so stay there, especially Mr. McAfee can stay there. I want him to stay. Okay, that's all right. So we're going to lay this bill over temporarily, and then Representative Hamilton is going to move his next bill, which is House File 8. I don't know, what is that one?
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 835.
And
possible inclusion.
Right, and you made it better as you thought about it, and so you want to move the A1 amendment, do you?
I will move the A1 amendment.
All right, and this is the first stop the bill's had, so it puts the bill in order to start with. So any questions about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Okay. So I think we're having a good discussion here, and I think this continues the theme about the low-paid group. Is that right? Just want to tell us what you're about here. And
you know, I just reiterate what I said earlier when I talked about the rate disparities, and you know, I'm located out in deep rural Minnesota, and we receive deep rural rates, and this bill will allocate dollars to the low-rate receivers, and there's a funding formula in there, and the technical amendment addresses some of that as well. I have Mr. Held here that he can answer any questions we may have. But again, it's just to help out those low rate receivers.
And the fiscal note on this, and that would help out, is it $9 million this bill would spend?
Mr. Chairman, it's the fiscal note is it's being handed out now if you don't have it.
Okay.
All right, it's 4.5 a year. So yes,
yeah, okay.
$9 million on a biennial.
Okay. So Representative Fritz had a bill, something like this, that I think he's less expensive than yours, Representative Fritz. I think so. He's the better shopper, apparently, of the two of you. And I would rather, if there's no, I mean, you've kind of, we understand the discussion we've had. I didn't hear the joke, but it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd love to hear it.
Oh, she said she shops local. Anyway, but I'd rather put the time into the other bill if we can, and so we fully understand the challenge that is upon us, and we would like to find $9 million. And what was yours, Representative Fritz? What was your fiscal note?
I don't have it.
Oh, it was considerable. Anyway, so we wish there was this available, and we aren't in those times. So you want to offer 10 more seconds on this, or is that kind of good?
Well, Mr. Chairman, no. Like I said, and I've worked with Representative Fritz over the years as well to address this. I know it's a big concern for you as well. And I just ask everybody to please consider it. Understand that there are disparities out there, and the low-rate receivers, of course, they're subject to some closure and some hard times, of course.
And I think you made your point pretty good. So this bill is laid over for possible inclusion. We'll take up again House File 828. There's a report from the and why don't we gather the three? I think Ms. Kimball had a goal, but how about if the other testifiers would come down and make a little panel here? We have some work on the amendment that we did. Representative Schumacher, I'll bring the, if you want to move the A5 amendment again. I guess that's still kind of before us. So, do you have an amendment you want to tell us about? Ms. Pinelli, want to read the amendment to us?
Mr. Chair, members, I think on
so, Brad, why don't you gather them around here?
H0828A5 amendment on page 3, you want to delete the new language on line 8 and delete page 3, line 9, and replace that with a new sentence that reads, "For purposes of reporting under this section, for employees of certified boarding care homes and certified nursing homes referenced in subdivision 6, paragraph C, federal reporting requirements meet state requirements." Period.
Okay, did everybody get that, or do you want to hear it again? Representative Hosh, were you part of this process? Okay. Why don't you read it again, just so I think it sounds like really complicated, so it must be good. But why don't you read it one more time so people hear it?
Okay, Mr. Chair. We're deleting the new language on page 3, line 8, and page 3, line 9, and replacing that with, "For purposes of reporting under this section, for employees of certified boarding care homes and certified nursing homes referenced in Subdivision 6, paragraph C, federal reporting requirements meet state requirements, period.
I think that says what we talked about. And Representative Hash, give me a thumbs up on that, so that's good. Representative Hash.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy with it now. It is something that I will look further into, though. I want to compare what the state definitions and federal definitions are.
Right. Eventually. And I think members understand the intent here, but also the need to help these places survive. Any more discussion? Anybody in the public want to talk about this amendment? Okay, seeing no more discussion, all in favor of the A5 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Representative Schumacher, for that. And now we have two. Mr. McAfee, you have to sit at the other end of the table. We have to have you there just to remember. Just to have you here. And was there the administrator that came from somewhere that wanted to come and be part of this as well? Somebody said there's another person that wished to testify on this.
Okay.
Wasn't there somebody else who came? That
no, I think that's it.
Oh, the other administrator. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And Ms. Kimball had to go too. All right, sorry. Do the best we can. So at least now we have 12 minutes to have a little panel here. So anyway, are there any questions for the panel? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This can probably be answered pretty simply. I'm not sure by who, though. What Mr. McAfee mentioned about having long-term care insurance but having it only cover, I think you said, a third. How common is that, people carry the insurance and then it doesn't cover?
So, Ms., would you tell me how to say your last name?
Okramovich.
Ms. Jane. Okay.
As Thank an you. Aside, you're right.
Thank you very much.
My students were allowed to call me Mrs. O.
Mrs. O, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair.
Dino, because
Mr. Chair.
We love you. It's nice when you come. So please.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair and
Representative Murphy wants to interrupt the
Well, just Mr. Chair, if she's Miss Jane, does that make you Mr. Drysdale?
Oh, my.
I like it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. For us younger members,
they don't know. Yeah, they don't know who that is.
From Gilligan's Island, or
that would make him Opie, I think. So, anyway, okay, so
Beverly Hillbillies, I know.
Ms. O, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I really think, and I'm just as guilty of this as others might be who have long-term care insurance, is when I took out my long-term care insurance, and I know I've told some of you, I was fortunate enough to have done it at the age 60. Now 73, so I want to tell you my premium, $1,600 a year that I'm paying on long-term care insurance. Fortunately, 2 years before I was diagnosed with breast cancer, because that would have disqualified me automatically. You're not going to get any coverage under long-term care when you have any type of illness like that on it. But what I didn't realize at the time, of course, it sounded pretty good, $100 a day, and I think it's gone up to maybe $115 a day that it pays. When you hear what it costs per day and what the cost can be, the difference between what your policy will really pay or does pay and what it costs, again, that's what the difference that he's talking about on it. And people don't realize. They think, oh, I've got long-term care insurance that'll take care of it. Well, he's paying $48,000 a year. I mean, think about what $48,000 means to us, even if partially it's paid for by long-term care insurance. And one of our representatives just last week, who the coalition said, he talked with an insurance salesman from Metropolitan Life and asked him, how about long-term care insurance? And he said, we don't sell it in Minnesota anymore. He said, why? You're not making a profit on it.
So. Representative Liebling, did you want to follow up? Representative Gottwald, you had a question before. Did that go away? And then Representative Giffmeyer.
I'll ask my question real quick. I know this 86% number for the survey has been thrown around a bit, and I've had some people I've talked to question what was the wording of the question, because a lot of that goes into how people answer a survey question. I don't know. Nothing in the materials that I saw indicates what the question
Actually,
was.
Actually, we have a volunteer coming down to answer that question.
So it would be nice to know exactly how that question was asked.
So, yeah, just... Welcome to the committee. And
Mr. Chair, I'm Amy McDonough from AARP. And I just wanted to say that you have a copy of the actual question in your packet. We have a press release that's attached to the actual question. And it was a rather, as we know, this is a very complicated issue, so it was a rather long question, but we included the question in your packet.
Did you find that, Representative Gottwald? Well, let's move on. Representative Kiffmeyer, we can come back to that if you want to have some more discussion about the question. Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Representative Hamilton in particular, I just was listening to what you had said and to what Mr. Ball had said, and I think I kind of get a sense of where you were going, and it was like, here's the cost, and they're paying $25 a day below that cost, both Medicaid or Medicare and private pay. And I think what you were saying is that if you do away with rate equalization, it would allow the private pay to pay the cost. My problem is, in the way things tend to work, they'll not only pay their 25, they'll pay the government's 25. So they'll be paying, because that tends to be in order to cover costs if they can't get it from government. That, you know, it's one thing to say, well, here's the cost, and you should pay that cost. I can kind of get that, but only to that far. Is there anything in this legislation that sees to it that if there is that set cost, that that private pay person only pays that part of the cost?
Which, Representative Hamilton.
Maybe Mr. Held can come down to verify this as well, but... I would say no, that there is not a cap on the. Is that correct, Mr. Held? Yeah, there is not a cap to prohibit what you had just said.
Actually, I have to give the AARP credit for like the world's longest survey question. It's like a, I don't know, 30% of a page long. Anyway, how was the hang-up? We had, let's see the number of hang-ups. Like, sorry, I got to cook dinner. Y'all have not done. Anyway, that's a Gawal.
Well, Mr. Chair, my only point about asking about it, and I appreciate people driving me, there's a lot of paper around this issue, and that's typical with more complicated issues. But if you read through this, if you take the time to read through this paragraph, I can't imagine anybody putting anything but yes because of the way it's worded. It doesn't really give a complete picture of the issue, and that's kind of my point. 86% of people not having the background or the length of debate about this as we've had would certainly vote the way they voted on this, not understanding the rest of the issue. So I'm not belittling the effort, but when people say 86% of all Minnesotans think this is a bad idea, I beg to differ. I think once they understand the issue, they're actually a little more more interested in supporting it.
And that's what 800 people took the survey looks like. Any other member questions? Representative McElfactory. I think it's good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for either Mr. McAfee or Mrs. O. Thank you for bearing with me on that. In looking at the purchase of long-term health care insurance, and I know that it's been said that we are encouraging people to plan for their old age and for the possibilities, but knowing that insurance companies are in the business of being in business, do you feel that with the repeal, or the possible repeal of the rate equalization, that it would in fact drive the cost of long-term health care insurance up and actually have the risk of placing it out of the reach of many people?
Mr. Mack?
When I took it out, the insurance guy that comes, which the health care insurance, long-term insurance, we bought it, like 15 years ago, so we've paid in a long time. And not thinking what the difference would be, that was a $150,000 policy. But I really don't know. I would hate, it could possibly go up, but I don't think it will. I think what needs to be done is the more people think about their long-term care. But those especially have assets or have savings should be thinking about that and have some long-term care.
Representative McIntyre and Mr. Chair and committee, one of the things that we hear very often, you know, is especially for people that sell long-term and care insurance policies, oh, well, you know, if your assets are, I believe the figure they pick is $250,000 or more, you probably don't really need to look at taking out long-term care insurance. What you're going to hear in the testimony of most of the people is that's nothing, because there are people that are going to go through $500,000 and $1 million. We've had people testify last year. And so will it go up? Probably, because my insurance premiums, my, you know, my Medicare supplement's going up every time. And it's to the point where it's like, okay, what's got to go?
Pass the law.
It's a very difficult decision, and I don't know what it really costs right now as far as long-term care insurance, but I bet it's a lot more than one, yeah.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative McElfatrick, you bring up a great point. And if this moves forward and if it's an omnibus bill, some information that I'd ask for as well is to answer that question. We are one of only two states in the nation that have rate equalization, and so I would like to be able to compare our cost of insurance compared to the other 48 states. You bring up a great point, and we should have that information if this does move forward.
Representative McElfatrick.
Thank you. Yeah, I am just concerned because now I am just buying long-term health care insurance, and I got my first premium notice, and I had to call up and say, you know what, I can't afford this coverage. I have to lower my rate. So I am concerned that at the same time we're telling people to plan for your old age and the possibilities of that we may see it out of reach of many people. That is a real concern of mine.
But don't give up on that.
Mr. Matt.
Don't cancel it?
No, don't give up.
And I just want to, you know, the way that rates are these days, if you were 30 years from now, or how long when do you plan to go in 50 years from now? If rates haven't gone up in 50 years by the time you get to there, and they still have to do the same kind of work, you might have wished you would have had to pay a little bit more money. That's the exaggeration of the current situation they're in. Just to encourage you, for the big picture of it. Does that make sense? I mean, they've been pretty much flat for 5 years. Is that about what it's been? With minimal increases, and everything else has gone up. That's the challenge. Representative Gottwell.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair. I mean, this really is kind of the crux of the issue, too, and this bill touches on it somewhat, but, you know, the fact that we have kind of as a default financial planning right now that people, you know, spend off whatever assets they've got and go on medical assistance as a default is part of the problem. I brought a bill a couple years ago that would have increased the long-term care tax credit. That didn't pass. I don't know what it is right now, but it's so minimal that we have. And I wonder, does anybody here have the statistic for what percentage of Minnesotans purchase long-term care, you know, above a certain age? It's very low, I know that.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. We have medical assistance costs that are climbing through the roof. That doesn't seem to be a good long-term solution either, and yet at the same time people are not able to either afford or are choosing not to find other private ways of covering their own long-term health care.
Got to keep moving. There's three more people with questions. And we got McDonald, Kiffmeyer, and Hosh, and Hamilton wants
to that point, I think.
Yeah, so just be kind of brief.
A quick comment on the long-term care insurance issue. I believe the tax credit is $100 per person in the state of Minnesota. My wife and I carry it, and it is expensive, but within the provider community, we are promoting that long-term care insurance as part of the solution of health care reform, and it's an obligation for those of us that work in long-term care if we want to promote that, I believe, to be consistent and carry it ourselves, so I do carry it.
I think mine costs $1,800 a year or something. Yeah. Representative McDonald, you still have a question?
Oh, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My Aunt Abby McDonald was the administrator of Elam Homes in Watertown for many, many years. Do you know Abby, Aunt Abby?
I know. I was just with her before I came here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? But she's back. You're she was just retired.
Abby,
you must know Uncle Flip, then.
I do.
He's the leprechaun. Where's Representative Murphy? Well, anyway, I speak in favor of the bill, and I would like to thank Representative Hamilton for bringing this to the attention. I should have known about the fact that the nursing homes were only getting less than what it cost them to do business. And if you ask me on the street if you want nursing homes to be around when a 30 or 40 year old is going to retire or need them, I'd say 86% would say, yeah, we want to make sure that they're getting paid their fair cost by the state. Do you know that the nursing homes, at least the one in Watertown, has fundraisers every year? Like schools have to have fundraisers because they lack payment. And we have a Hawaiian luau. Maybe you've been them out to the River's Edge in Watertown. We have a big fundraiser, and the local businesses donate things to it, and it's a lot of fun. You get to meet Uncle Abby. Or
bring
Uncle
an
Flip.
Envelope along next time and pass them on.
Yeah, a little envelope. But so, and I wasn't aware of this, that they're losing money, and you're beholden. The state is beholden you not to charge the fair rate to those who can perhaps pay their fair share, and that you're losing money. So obviously, the poll, if you 86% would want nursing homes around here, and that you should at least be have the opportunity to recover, at least recover your expenses.
Okay. We got to keep moving.
Okay, very good. Thank you, and I support this very much.
Thank you. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one of the things that I think is just a comment, that if we do remove the rate equalization, I think it does not solve the problem of the distribution between the highs and the lows. Does not touch that at all. That's got to be dealt with. And otherwise, all you're doing is making the situation worse and worse. And that's hardly the right thing to do. The other thing is that there needs to be a mechanism to cap the private pays to their cost level, because that's only fair. It's one thing to pay your share. It's one thing to pay a bunch of other people's government share. So I think, you know, I just want to give that input, because I'm not sure how things all may fare out here in the future. So I think with those two comments, I think, you know, whatever way we do, I think 835 is still, no matter what, a good thing to do. So those are my comments, and I hope you'll take them into consideration, Representative Hamilton. Thank you.
Representative Hosh, you get the last question, then we'll have a comment from the Representative Hamilton or whoever, and then we'll be done.
Mr. Chair, it's not a question, it's a comment. And first to Representative Hamilton, I know what it feels like to be up there. I was up there with many of the same testifiers last year on this issue, and this is a tough issue, and I'm glad that we're discussing it. I don't know where I sit on it right now, because I think it depends what we do when it comes to our reimbursement rate that's going to come out of this committee. A few things that I want to discuss, though. We're discussing this today because of the inadequacy of funding of long-term care facilities. If we adequately funded long-term care facilities, I don't think we'd be discussing equalization today. Unfortunately, we have some very difficult decisions, and if we do make cuts, each one of those cuts not only will affect the MA individual, but also the private pay individual. And I'm not sure how our nursing homes will be able to do that. A few things, though, that I do want to quickly state. This bill now has some efforts at trying to reduce the gap in disparities. If you look at the nursing home rate disparities report, we had from 1999 to 2001, our disparities were actually closing a little bit. And from 2003 to 2008, that same report said that the disparities climbed steadily. And in 2009, it closed a little bit. And one of the things that we did in 2009 was provide some funding increases for nursing homes. So if we really want to get to this issue, we do have to talk about funding. And the decisions we have before us are between bad and worse. Equalization is a perfect example, because neither option is an acceptable one, but one that we'll probably be forced to vote on. So I appreciate having this discussion. This is a tough one, Representative Hamilton, and I know your intentions are good. And hopefully we've learned something, and you know, we'll see what happens this year, and hopefully things will be better in years ahead.
Representative Hamilton, do you want the last word on this topic?
Mr. Chairman, testifiers, anything?
Go ahead.
One comment. When I mentioned the nursing home administrator from Greater Minnesota, he allowed me, he said, I may share his testimony. He sent me his cost report. They're earning 63 cents a day profit, he said, on there. So they're not losing, and they have MA patients. He told me the number of MA people they have and the number of private pay. They don't, and it's not a high number of private pay. They're not losing $25 a day. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And if you want to get that to us, we'd be enlightened. Representative Hamilton, you want the last word on this? Or?
Well, Representative Hosh, thank you for your comments as well. You know, you take a look at this, why it's so difficult. You have great people on both sides of this issue. You know, you have people that are providing care and trying to cover the costs to provide those care. You have people that are working in this field that are making less than desirable wages as well. You have great people on this side of the issue. You also have people on the side of the issue that are purchasing care that they both need and deserve. So that's why it's so difficult. And there's so much more that goes into this debate on how do we accomplish what it is that we're trying to accomplish. So I thank you, everybody, for the great discussion and the respectful nature as well from everybody that are on all sides of this issue. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close my remarks.
We'll lay the bill over for possible inclusion as amended. Just one other thing, and thanks for the witnesses that came, and Mr. McAfee especially.
You're welcome.
You here. Just so people know, our target is $1.63 billion plus the healthcare access fund, which is $230 million, which is a new land speed record, I think. So with that, actually, I just want to announce to members that are still here, especially to my friends on this side here, I'm going to attempt to be rolling language out. Lofton has a thick amendment, which obviously that'll be appearing on by Monday at 12:30 online. A week from Monday. Yeah. How is your heart? Anyway, and then it'll be hard copy. I don't know if it's going to be hard copies or not. I suppose there will be a Tuesday sometime. But it'll be online at 12:30, so we hope. I'm going to try to roll out blocks of that just at next week in the Reform Committee and here and wherever else I can, just so people can see. So to the public who's listening, you want to watch my amendments to whatever bill I'm offering. They may be a little bigger than what the bill was. So with that, we're adjourned.